Hi, I'm Hillary Burns, and today I'm going to talk about tracking teens with GPS-enabled cell phones to study their contextual exposures and adolescent risk behavior. So I don't have anything to disclose, and I'd just like to thank the Pacific Institute for funding this project. So there's a transitional period during older adolescence, and in this transition, risky behaviors like alcohol, tobacco, drug use, and delinquency really start to increase as teens really get more freedom to explore their environment without parental supervision. They also have much more mobility during this period as they start to be able to drive. Their friends are able to drive, they could ride with them. They also have a lot fewer parental controls and monitoring during this time period, so they really have much more control over where they go and what they do. So this really, all of these really lead to more opportunities to be able to explore new and riskier environments possibly. So this is really a key period where contextual exposures really start to influence teen risk behaviors more strongly. So a lot of research has shown that environmental contextual risks influence teen risk behaviors, and social disorganization is a contextual risk that influences teen risk behavior. And this is really just the residents' difficulty in maintaining physical and social order over their neighborhood. So alcohol outlets are considered an indicator of social disorganization. And even though teens really are less likely to get alcohol from outlets as from other sources, it's still related to their alcohol use because it increases access for their social contacts, and it also increases the perception of alcohol use as normative. So traditionally, there's a lot of different ways to look at contextual risk, and the most common being looking at administratively defined units around the teen's home, like a census tract. And these are really used often, but we don't really know if these really measure the exposures that are the most important to teen behaviors. So, for example, alcohol use may be influenced by disorganization around the teen's home, but it might also really be influenced by disorganization around their friend's home, where they spend a lot of time. So we don't really know if the residential context really reflects the actual exposures that the teens have. So in response to this, because of these issues, activity-based has recently emerged to measure contextual risk exposures, and this is really just the geographic area that the teen moves within during their daily activities. And so this has been calculated in a few different ways, and all of them can be useful. They also have limitations. So one of the ways is includes a lot of space where the participant hasn't been, so they couldn't have been exposed to risk in that area. So another method really relies on estimates of the routes that the teens took. So a lot of times they might use the road network to estimate the way the teen went from the different points. But this has been shown to be really different from their actual routes. So both in terms of distance and how directly they took those paths. Another method is looking at self-report of the teens common locations. And so, you know, this can be useful as well, but it usually has a limited number of destinations. And we really don't get information about the timing or the routes that they took. And it's also dependent on recall. So GPS, or global positioning system, can be used to overcome some of these limitations. We can get really detailed data about activities and paths, and it's been used to measure activities based. And so we get information about both the destinations and the routes that they took using GPS. So in this study, we created spaces that used buffers around the location points. And so really just to avoid confusion with the traditional methods of creating an activity space that a lot of times have spaces where the teen didn't go or that estimate routes, we use the term dynamic context. So I'll be using that term in the rest of the talk. And this is just all the places that the teen spends time in their daily activities. So this is the actual contextual exposure measured by the GPS routes. So this is really the time in this transitional period when teens really start to be able to go further afield from their home. They have, you know, less monitoring, they have more mobility, So this may be a really important time period to see their actual roots. So we had two main goals. The first was to look at whether teens' dynamic and residential context differ in terms of geographical location and socialist organization. So this is really looking at whether the residential neighborhood is representative of contextual exposures that were actually experienced. So the second one looked at the relationship between social disorganization in the dynamic context and teen alcohol, tobacco, and drug use and delinquency. So this is a pilot study. We used a convenient sample of 16 and 17-year-olds, and we had 18 participants, half female, and we had a range of neighborhoods from rural to urban to suburban. So the teens first completed an online survey, and then they were tracked for a week with GPS-enabled cell phones that they carried with them everywhere they went during that week. And then their locations were documented every 60 seconds with their latitude and longitude points. And those points were sent to a secure server. So most of the points or locations were able to be identified with latitude, longitude. Those that weren't, this was from signal interference or the battery died, things like that. So we conducted analysis with those missing points imputed and not imputed. And the results were really similar, so today I'm just going to talk about the results with it not imputed. So we used the AT&T Fusion 2 phone, and this is an Android touchscreen smartphone. And we chose this one because it has GPS capability and a really long battery life, and also because it's touchscreen to appeal to teenagers. So in the online survey, teens reported if they'd ever used alcohol, ever smoked a whole cigarette, or if they'd ever used marijuana. And for delinquency, this was measured with 25 items, included both delinquent and status offenses. So it ranged from really minor behaviors or more minor behaviors, like skipping school, to more serious things like threatening someone with a knife. And so we created an index that just reflected the number of these behaviors that they engaged in. So we had three measures of context. The first was low socioeconomic status, or SES, and this included things like the percent unemployed, percent in poverty. So the alcohol outlet data was from the Department of Alcoholic Beverage Control, and we counted the numbers of active alcohol outlets in the census tract and in the dynamic context. And so on-premise, this would be things like bars and restaurants that serve alcohol, whereas off-premise, this is like liquor stores. So we calculated the dynamic context by connecting the GPS points in time order, and we created a single multi-day route for each participant. So this really encompassed every place that the teen visited during that week. So we basically had this linear route, and we put buffers around that. We had a 30-meter, 100, and 200-meter buffer, and we did this to be able to capture point-located features that were near the GPS point that the participant was exposed to. So, for example, if you're standing across the street from a liquor store, you're not on the same location point, but you're still exposed to it, so we wanted to be able to capture that. So you can see this is an example of a dynamic context, and it's overlaid across census tracts. You can see the lines underneath it, and the different colors on the path reflect the different route buffers, and you can see the home location in green and the school location at the top right of the map. So then the archival indicators of disorganization from SES and outlet data were spatially joined to each point to reflect disorganization in the dynamic context. So the map on the left shows the dynamic context overlaid on the SES index by census tract. So the darker colors reflect lower SES areas. Then the map on the right shows it overlaid with alcohol outlets. So the red dots being off-premise and the green being on-premise. So this shows the teens' report of their risk behaviors from the annual survey, or the online survey. And these are really similar to national rates. So then we looked at the geographic overlap between the dynamic and the residential context. And we found that the dynamic context intersected about 24 census tracts on average. And this is really comparing the experienced environment to the home environment. And you can see they really go to a lot more places than just around their home. And they're really exposed to a lot more diverse conditions than is right around their home. And you can see the outline of the census tract around the home, that sort of a lighter green. So then we looked at, we compared the overlap of the physical area, the residential and the dynamic context, and we really found very little spatial intersection, so about 14% on average with the residential neighborhood. So you can see that where teens go is really quite different from where they live. So then we compared social disorganization in the dynamic and the residential context. And you can see the first bar in each set of bars is a residential context, so it's kind of pinkish-reddish one. And the other bars are the dynamic context at each buffer. So you can see that they were really exposed to substantially more alcohol outlets in their dynamic context as compared to their residential context. And on average, it was 9 times more. There was no significant difference for low SES. So then we looked at the association of disorganization in the dynamic context with risk behaviors, and first we conducted bivariate analyses. So we found that lifetime drinkers were exposed to more disorganization, as indicated by SES in their dynamic context as compared to non-drinkers. And this was significant for all of the buffers. We also found that drinkers were exposed to more on-premise outlets in their dynamic context than non-drinkers were. And we found the same for off-premise outlets as well. We also found that marijuana users were exposed to lower SES areas than non-users. And we didn't find any difference in exposure for smokers as compared to non-smokers. So we did find a significant relationship between low SES in the dynamic context and delinquency, and this was significant for all of the buffers. But delinquency was not related to the outlet. So then we conducted multivariable analysis where we controlled for gender and ethnicity, and you can see the strength of some of the relationships were reduced once the controls were added, likely due to the low power from the sample size of 18. But we did find some promising results in that teens that were exposed to more off-premise alcohol outlets and lower SES areas were more likely to be drinkers. We didn't find any relationship with smoking again, but we did find that exposure to low SES in the dynamic context was related to greater likelihood of marijuana use and to greater delinquency. We also, it's important to note that none of the contextual features in the residential context were related to any of these outcomes. So we had excellent compliance with our study. All of the participants returned the phone and the charger. Most said they liked the phone. It wasn't any bother to carry two phones because over half the teens already had their own phone. Some even chose to carry the study phone instead of their own. We really had very few issues come up with the GPS tracking, and these were easily resolved. So overall, we found that where teens go covers different geographical areas than where they live. And this residential neighborhood is the typical unit for assessing contextual exposure. So we've also found that there's differing levels of social disorganization in areas where teens spend time versus where they live. We found that they were exposed to substantially greater number of outlets in their dynamic context versus where they live. We also found that characteristics of a dynamic context were important for teen risk behaviors. So it's important to note some limitations, the first being the small sample size. As I said, it's a pilot study with sample size of 18. It's also the convenience sample instead of a random sample. And they were only tracked for a week. So we don't really know if their locations were typical of their normal travel patterns. So we really found big differences in exposure, both geographically and in terms of disorganization between their dynamic and their residential context. So this really shows the importance of considering dynamic context when you're looking at teen risk behaviors. So this is really a new way to quantify exposure that couldn't have been done in the past. So this really leads to several implications for prevention. And, you know, because of all the mobile devices, we really now have a new way to intervene with teen risk behaviors in real time. And basically, by being able to identify the teen's travel patterns before the risk behavior, interventions can really be tailored so that it's delivered at a time when it's most relevant for each person. So, for example, as teens enter a high-risk neighborhood, they could get a text message, if they enter the neighborhood that's been associated with their risk behavior in the past. And really, with the ubiquity of cell phones, this is something that's getting more and more feasible to think about. And so this is, you know, our findings show that this may be something that's worthwhile to consider. So we also are able to identify contextual influences that are most important to target for prevention and policy efforts. And then in the future, we'd like to look at this with a larger representative sample and to track teens for a longer period and really look at change over time. So that's all. Thank you. Yes, this was, as I said, it's a pilot study with convenience sample. So this was, we placed ads on Craigslist in several different sections every day. Also, I made contact with some after-school programs, and they posted flyers for me, and I was able to go and give a little brief talk about it, hand out flyers in person. I recruited several that way, and then people told their friends about it, and I also use my own friends, who had kids the right age. I think, it worked for a small sample. This is something we are applying for a larger grant, and so we're proposing random sampling. So definitely be, different.
Thanks. I'm Nathan Dunn from the University of Cape Town. It was very interesting.
Thank you.
I wonder if you had any sense of the youth adapted the activities you've been aware of what the study hypothesis was. And then also, I'm not quite sure about the projects for advertising. You focused on liquor outlets. Did you think about billboard advertising as part of the
Okay, your first question was about Craigslist? So
no.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's a really good question. That, of course, is something that could have happened. We did do exit measures at the end, after they were paid and returned the equipment. They denied that they changed their travel patterns. a lot of teens, you know, I think they're just used to, you know, GPS is on everywhere. I think they're just kind of used to it. It's not something they really think about. You know, a lot of teens, you know, some of our collaborators have done this in a longer time period, and they've said, the teens have reported that after a few days, they forget they're being tracked. So, and then your second question was about
billboards.
That's a good question. We did not measure that, but that is something that would be good to look at. Yes.
I wondered about how they traveled. And I also wondered, figure or a map, whether anything left the field, and was there a limit to the tracking area, or did you, I mean, some of them could have gone from, I don't know, Sacramento to San Francisco. I was wondering how you handled those kind of things.
Well, we asked them if they had any travel coming up. We tried to, you know, schedule their week tracking period when they weren't going to be going out of town. You know, if it was a holiday coming up, we waited till after that. So that didn't really come up. You know, we wanted to capture anywhere they went, but we didn't see that, you know, going really, you know, out of town or something.
Were they driving or were they walking or what?
Mostly driving and some walking. It depended on where they live. Some of the teens were more urban and it was more walkable. So it depended. Sorry, go ahead.
The lady in the middle, the lady over there, and the two gentlemen in the back.
I'm Allie Eklund. I'm from the University of Minnesota. I wanted to know about duration of time that they stayed at different places, and if you looked at that, and also if you looked at hours, like if they were away in the middle of the night and not at home, and if that provided some contextual measures.
Okay, the length of time is what you asked about.
Where they were traveling.
We're starting to do some analyses looking at the time of day. We want to see, you know, what's the most important time when they're exposed to alcohol outlets. We're still looking at that. But yeah, that's something we're interested in. And what was the second part?
Duration that they
were at
different times.
We're also looking at that as well. Yes, thanks.
Hi, thank you so much. I'm more interested in the approval process.
Yes, of course, yes. We did have IRB approval for the study. We had the parent informed parent consent, informed assent of the teens. We had a lot of different, I have a list in just a second. Well, pardon?
So IRB didn't give you a hard time?
No, I mean, we had a lot of protections in place. We had their location data sent to secure servers, and it wasn't stored on the phone. So I think that's one thing, if they lost the phone, it wasn't like all their personal data is right there. Also, the teens could set personal passwords on their phones. Same thing, you know, if there's the data's not there. The data was sent like every 5 minutes, so it's barely on the phone at all. What else? Oh, and then we reused the phone, so we completely reset, erased everything off the phones in between participants. So, yes.
I think there was a gentleman in the back who just raised his hand. No? Okay, so I'm afraid I have to kind of stop here, but I'm sure Dr. Burns will be available, or if we have more time at the end of the talk, we'll entertain more questions. Thank you for your scintillating.